the regular monthly updates from the board meetings of the International Accounting Standards Board. My name is Robert Bruce and I work as a financial journalist. With me to discuss the highlights of the March 2010 board meeting are board member Steve Cooper and the IASB's Director of Technical Activities, Alan Tashiro. This month has seen an absolutely epic series of meetings, mostly joint with FASB, the US Standard Setter, and EFRAG, the European Financial Reporting Advisory Group. And 20 minutes ago, you finished almost 8 days of meeting across the month of March. What have you been up to, and why has it taken so long?
Well, we've had a reasonably full agenda, and what we want to do is today focus on talking a little bit about insurance project consolidations, the derecognition, income taxes. We'll think of, focus mostly on those and then give you a wrap up at the end of the other projects. We're getting to the point now where we're closing down to be ready to produce our exposure drafts, and it's this point in time, I think, that it's the trickier issues that have been bubbling around to the surface actually come to the surface, and we have to resolve them as boards and deal with differences. It's not just about us versus the FASB, but even within our own board, these are quite controversial issues. Just about every project that we're dealing with at the moment, they're very difficult. They're some of the issues that have really people have struggled with over a number of years, and as a result, it just takes time.
So this is life at the sharp end.
Indeed it is, indeed.
Well, do you want to start off? Where do you want to start?
The first thing is more of a procedural issue in that this week we discussed IAS 37, and this is an IFRS to replace our general liability standard. And we decided this week that we'll decide to extend the comment period. We've actually, IAS 37, the proposals there, have been out for public comment. They were initially put out for public comment nearly 5 years ago, and the board's been discussing issues to do with recognition and some issues to do with measurement. The board's reached some fairly strong conclusions, good consensus around the recognition, but there are some issues about measurement that the board thought ought to be re-exposed, and we do have a limited re-exposure therefore called measurement of liabilities in IAS 37. Some people have expressed to us a concern about commenting on that because they really didn't seem to understand the recognition requirements that the board had agreed to. So we placed a staff draft of the full proposed IFRS on our website on the 19th of February, I think it was, and in response to some requests from outside, we've decided to extend the comment period on this measurement aspect. So it gives a full 3 months for people to consider the measurement proposals in the context or conjunction with the recognition proposals. So the new comment period close off is 19th of May of this year.
And that'll give people just a little bit more time to sort their minds out and ideas out. And
we think so.
And just get it all clear in there.
Yeah, it's a 3 month comment period, which is, given how narrow the scope of the re-deliberation is, we think that's appropriate.
Steve, insurance took up a lot of time.
We've had several sessions on insurance, Robert, this board meeting, covering a number of different aspects. I'm not going to try and go through all of them in what we're doing here, but I thought there were three issues particularly that people would be interested in, three controversial issues. Firstly, acquisition costs. These are the expenses an insurance company incurs initially with when they're writing an insurance contract, so particularly commissions, for example, and how these should be accounted for, the number of different approaches. They can be expensed, they can be capitalized, they can be dealt with as part of the insurance cash flows, revenue can be recognized to cover them, and it's been a very controversial area. Initially, in the discussion paper phase, the board decided that acquisition costs would be covered by an initial recognition of revenue, so there wouldn't be a day one loss arising from acquisition costs. Last year, when the ISB and the FASB met together, we decided by a fairly narrow majority that we would expense acquisition costs, trying to be consistent with the revenue recognition project, because in general revenue recognition, any costs incurred in obtaining a contract are treated as an expense. This has been particularly controversial. We've re-deliberated it now. These were previously tentative decisions. We've re-deliberated it, particularly in the light of further outreach and comments that we've received. The IASB has decided that we will not expense the incremental acquisition costs that arise as a result of obtaining these insurance contracts. Instead, we will deal with them in a way in which does not produce that day one loss. Now, we haven't quite decided on exactly how we should do that. One approach is to treat the acquisition cost as one of the contract cash flows. Another one is to deduct the acquisition cost from the premium received. Effectively, they're really the same thing in terms of the net effect on the income statement. What it means is that the acquisition costs are recognized over the period of the contract itself. We have decided not to capitalize acquisition costs and treat them as an intangible asset. FASB, on the other hand, have still maintained their tentative position of expensing acquisition costs. That produces a difference between the two boards. If those positions remain, then that difference will be highlighted in the exposure draft that is produced, and of course we will listen to people's input.
And what happens after that?
Well, we will then re-deliberate and we will attempt to reach a common view for the issuance of the final standard, taking into account the input that we receive during the comment period. That's the plan.
Yeah.
The other issue I wanted to mention is one of risk margin versus composite margin, the whole measurement of an insurance contract. The IASB has previously decided that the measurement of an insurance contract should look at expected cash flows, discounting, add a risk margin, and then the difference between those three things and the premium is treated as a residual margin.
Do you want to provide a few definitions here for just to explain it further?
The concept of a risk margin is something that is also mentioned in IAS 37. The idea is that the liabilities that we're dealing with in terms of insurance are risky. You don't know exactly what you will have to pay out. You know that you're likely to have to pay something in respect of claims and related expenses, but you don't know how much. Different types of insurance will have different degrees of risk, and clearly the more onerous, the more risky, the more variable the cash flows for insurance contract, the higher the liability that many people would argue you should recognize. So the risk margin is an attempt to try and quantify that. Now, the problem is that the whole issue of measuring risk margins is particularly controversial. The methodology, there's an enormous range of different approaches, different ways of calibrating it, different answers that you can get. And there are a number of members of both boards that believe the subjectivity and difficulty of measuring risk margins is such that what we should do is just have one margin, the difference between the expected cash outflows and the premium, and recognize that as profit over an appropriate period. So we discussed this further. We've got more to go on this as well. The tentative decision of the IASB is that we should retain the risk margin approach. The tentative decision of the FASB was that they would prefer to go for the composite margin. Again, this is an issue that eventually we will have to resolve. It could potentially mean that for the exposure draft, if the positions remain as they are with the exposure draft, we might have two things in there. But we have further discussions to go on that issue as well. The IASB also discussed a number of other things, the runoff of the residual margin and how that should be done. We decided over the coverage period. We also discussed disclosures, contract definitions, a number of other issues. So full explanation of all of those to be found in the meeting update.
Excellent. Now, Alan, do you want to talk a little bit about consolidation?
Yeah, thanks. This project, we put out an exposure draft towards the end of 2008, so our board had a look at that in 2009, and we initially set a target of publishing our final requirements towards the end of last year. But around about the third quarter, as part of a meeting with the FASB, we actually agreed to defer our requirements in terms of finalising, because we thought we had a very good window of opportunity to converge with the US. And so the FASB in the US has come on board to re-deliberate this with us. And this week was really quite crucial in a sense, because it is trying to anchor down the core part of the model. And what was very helpful was that we do have a control-based model, which is, for those applying IFRS, one of the tensions we've had is to try and eliminate the difference between a risk and rewards type model versus a power-based model. Yeah. And we really do have a power-based model that's emerged out of this. And it is it's good within our board. It's almost unanimous. And with the FASB, we've got the same support. It is about power, and the question is asking when you actually have the ability to direct the activities of another entity. And if you've got that power, plus the returns that go with it, then you basically control it, you consolidate. And I think both boards agree that this ability to model works. The question is how much evidence you actually need to support that decision. Because what's fundamental here is that I think the way most people think about consolidation and control, particularly when you're talking about a normal operating type entity, is you really need to have more than half the voting rights. And if you've got that, you put the board into place, for example. This decision means that we are clearly cementing in the idea that you can control with less than half the voting rights. And the question really is just whether you characterise this as what sort of contracts in place do you need to have to supplement your votes, or what sort of evidence that this shareholding you've got is sufficient to give you control. That's really is, I think, where the staff at the moment are putting the drafting pieces together, so we'll see how that fleshes out. But it's very good for us because that is quite a switch, particularly for the US. They've had a standard that's had this rule in place since 1951, so it's quite a change for them.
So it's a good example of how convergence, some of the things we've been talking about, convergence is taking a long time, whereas here we have one which is taking a long time, but you're getting there.
Yeah, and we always have a bit of trouble too when we get out of sync in terms of our timing on projects. And this one we're ahead. Yeah. And of course, the nice things for us is that we actually got pretty good support for what we're proposing, mainly because we're building off what we think were pretty decent standards anyway in IAS 27 and SIC 12. So we were trying to embed the same principles but cohesively. Yeah. And the FASB was on a different timetable. So this is really helpful for us because we've managed to slow our timetable down, give the FASB time to basically come on board with us, and we've actually reached fundamentally the same decisions on here. So it's a good opportunity. The other thing about the model too is that not only have we agreed you can control something like an operating entity with less than half the voting rights, but this model is going to apply generally. So this model is going to sit over the top of SPEs, or structured investment vehicles, securitization vehicles, all of those types of things. And again, that means that we will have a cohesive model. There won't be a trade-off or people trying to fall between the gaps between IAS 27 and SIC 12, our two requirements. And similarly for the US, they're going out now with a proposal, or will do later this month, where they look as if they can propose getting rid of this whole concept they have of variable interest entity, which is all the literature that grew out of the Enron failures.
Yes.
Seems like quite a long time ago now.
Yes. Do you want to, derecognition was something else which we you covered. Do you want to talk some about that? Or?
Yeah, I'll just introduce that. Perhaps Steve can pick up from me, but derecognition there. Again, we went out a little bit after the consoles exposure draft with a derecognition model, and we had qualified but reasonably strong support for our alternative view with a couple of exceptions. And one of those exceptions was the situation where you basically have a repurchase agreement, or repo as they call it. So for example, you might sell an instrument that you've got and then agree to buy it back at a later time. And the difficulty is whether you characterize that as, well, I've really just borrowed against it, or whether you've actually sold it and buy it back. And it's particularly difficult if you've got what we call fungible instruments, in a sense. If it's in government stock, for example, then you don't necessarily care whether you get the same instrument back with the same certificate number, for example.
Yes.
So we've had a look at that.
Yeah, I mean, many people regard these transactions as effectively financings, as secured borrowing. Most people in the financial services industry look at it that way, and we had a many, many letters arguing that we should account for it in that way in the standard. I mean, as with many of these things in accounting, you can look at it two ways. You can think of these transactions as a forward contract. If somebody had purchased a forward outright, then we would account for it as a derivative. People argue that this is no different. We should account for these as derivatives with full disclosure of the risk that is associated with those. But I think the board has been persuaded of the view that repos are financing, and that's the way we should go. It does mean that repos are effectively an exception to the general model that we are producing, but we believe that it's an important exception, and this gives greater transparency and clarity to these types of transactions.
Excellent. Anything else on derecognition before we move on to, we're going to move on to income tax next, I think?
No, we've got a lot of issues to deal with at derecognition as well, but at the moment the team's working pretty actively, and I think we expect it back in the agenda again next month.
But I think we're fairly close to producing a coherent model on derecognition, so I think we're pushing ahead pretty rapidly on that.
Good. Income tax, the last major issue we were going to talk about.
Yeah, income tax is, we issued an exposure draft last year, proposing quite a number of changes, not fundamentally changing the principles of IAS 12 and of deferred tax, but proposing a number of changes, some of which were removing exceptions, which we have in the model. Part of the objective was to achieve some greater degree of convergence with the FASB, although it wouldn't achieve full convergence. A number of those proposals were not liked by constituents. We had a lot of comments on it. We've taken note of those very carefully. And what we were doing this meeting was really trying to decide what is the way forward for the income tax project. Some people think we should drop it entirely. Some people think that we should really look at income tax in a more fundamental way and start a project to really explore the fundamentals of the whole of deferred tax accounting. However, a number of people say to us that there are some very important fixes that we need to make to IAS 12, particularly in respect to property revaluations, where people argue some of the things we have produced some rather odd answers, particularly in some jurisdictions. We don't have any guidance in the standard at the moment at all on uncertain tax positions. So a number of calls for us to do short-term fixes. So what the board has decided to do is look at the whole objective and scope of the income tax project. We are going to proceed on the basis of trying to make some of these short-term fixes. We be persuaded that a number of these are important enough for us to look at. And in particular, we're going to propose changes to propose an approach to uncertain tax positions and propose changes to certain deferred tax calculations for investment properties to deal with those two areas. And then we have a number of more minor proposals in the ED that were supported, which we are going to carry through. So, for example, guidance on assessing the need for a valuation allowance, and one or two other things that certainly got a lot of support. So that's really where we're going to go. We're also going to look at one or two other issues to do with property revaluations and dividends from property companies, which also have some important tax implications. So the idea is that we will make some proposals for limited changes to IAS 12, hopefully to improve that. In the long term, we may well look at deferred tax in more detail. This will be a future agenda decision. We know that some of the national standard setters are undertaking a project at the moment to look at that, and we're grateful for their help in doing that. But fundamental revision of deferred tax, that's going to have to be pushed out some way into the future.
And of course, the difficulty is that we've got a couple of the issues are not going to be that easy. I think uncertain tax positions, in some ways, whatever we do is not necessarily going to be popular with some people. And in the case of investment properties, it's not an easy fix either. Some people say it is, but it's either creating an exception to our current model or trying to work out in some way, a fundamental way of altering the words to deal with those situations where you just don't pay capital gains tax. And you know, it's not clear which way we're going to have to go to resolve that. We've given the staff at least direction on which way to go. So we've got a couple of potentially difficult issues that we've got to deal with, and then a range of what we think are fairly very helpful improvements. And of course, we don't want to delay the helpful improvements by getting bogged down with the other ones.
No. Okay, well that's covered the major issues you've been spending all this time on. Do you want to just wrap up on anything else and future meetings and what people, what else people should be looking out for in the coming month?
Yeah, I guess one point, just before I go through the other projects that we talked about this week, it might seem like a fairly short list that Steve and I have been through, but I think we spent 12 hours in board time just this week alone discussing insurance. And this just goes to show how difficult some of these issues are and how seriously we take them. So just because, you know, we summarise the insurance decision in 5 or 10 minutes doesn't mean that we didn't spend days on it.
Yes.
We also looked at annual improvements last week, and we're just finalising a package there. These are usually quite narrow but helpful improvements to IFRS's. We've looked at fair value measurement. That's good news for us, as it looks like we're heading down a pathway now that we ought to have a converged standard with the US by the end of this end of the third quarter, and we're hopeful. We have financial instruments teams are still working actively, so we've made a bit of progress on hedge accounting. Last month we reported on the financial instruments, the liability aspect of it. Our board had an update from two of our other bodies, the IFRIC, or Interpretations Committee, as it's known now, and our Advisory Council. We also had a look at joint arrangements, and we've now aligned our disclosure requirements for JVs, joint ventures, and associates, so we don't have these what appear to be differences, but for no real reason why we have differences in disclosure requirements. Leases as well as making progress, and revenue recognition, but most of those were RevRec in particular was really dealing with some small sweep issues as we close down that project as we get to an ED.
I mean, I think we're pretty close to an ED on revenue recognition and an awful lot of agreement on where we're going there. Leases are slightly more difficult. The boards have pretty much agreed on lessee accounting. I don't think we have too many problems there. Lessor accounting, we still have difficulty over the so-called derecognition versus performance obligation approach for dealing with lessors. And again, a lot of discussion along those lines at the meeting. But perhaps sometimes when we do these podcasts, often we give the impression of more disagreement than agreement. But of course, it's the areas of disagreement that are particularly the controversial ones, and we end up sort of talking about those. But at the same time, there's an awful lot of agreement on many of these subjects.
It's always going to be that it's a difficult thing where it's harder to get disagreements, which are the things where most of the discussion is going to be based.
And that's where we need the input from constituents as well. And,
yes.
We'll be particularly focusing on that, obviously, in the exposure draft and the questions that we ask in that exposure draft.
Of course, revenue recognition is a good example. We didn't say much today, but the boards actually agree on just about every major issue, I think, in their project.
Well, the next step for that is drafting and balloting, and people will see the end result of that very shortly.
Yeah, the other thing we did too is I think five of our sessions over the last week or so have been on disclosure, and the difficulty with disclosure is we do these things in isolation sometimes within a project. We are going to have a look at all of the disclosure requirements that we've discussed over the last week or so again, just to make sure that we're not basically duplicating our disclosure requirements or having consistencies in the way we deal with things.
Right. What next? When is the next meeting, and is there anything else that anybody people should be looking out for?
Well, the next thing that doesn't involve the board as much, but our oversight body, the trustees, are meeting next week here in London. So that will be broadcast or webcast on Monday, Tuesday. And then our next board meeting is on the 8th of April, so we'll be doing that. Most of the board members will be here in London, but it's just an afternoon meeting, I think, and the FASB will be joining us by video for that one. And then we meet again for another week block on the week of the 19th of April, and the FASB will be across here for three of those days as well.
More epic meetings ahead.
Indeed.
Steve Cooper, Alan Teixeira, thank you very much indeed. And finally, the traditional disclaimer: this podcast presents a non-authoritative overview of some of the major topics discussed during the board week in March. The views expressed are those of the individuals in this podcast and are not necessarily those of the IASB. Those of you who wish to go into the official detail of the board meeting should refer to the IASB update, which is published on the IASB website the week after the meeting. Thank you very much indeed. Goodbye.
Do you like being called non-authoritative?